April 30, 2021 is the Wild for Pedro show. Lock for Pedro show. Happy Saturday, last day of April. Almost gone. Payday's coming. Started off with John Coltrane with Eric Dolphy. And I think, Reggie Workman was on the bass, but McCoy on the piano, McCoy Tyner and Alvin Jones on the drum. Every time we say goodbye, live in Copenhagen, 1961, and then Amulets, Observe Effect from the new record. And, people, I'm not man alone. Brother Matt's at the Love Grotto on the Pleasure Point a couple miles south because we're still quite in quarantino mode, but not man alone because of those software engineers in Estonia with their Skype invention. I got Brother Randall Taylor. Welcome aboard, Randall.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Absolute. It's a big honor for me to have. I love your music. I love what you're doing. Let's explore your journey, how you got to here now. Can you please bring the earliest musical recollection you got?
Earliest musical recollection, like as far as like just playing music or just experiencing?
Because I think you experience before you start playing, unless you're a real kick-ass motherfucker and just start playing.
I'm not a child prodigy at all. But I think one of the earliest things I remember is my dad had a record collection, and he was just very into a rock and roll dad. And he, I remember he would play on like Sunday mornings, he'd play with Van Halen, and we would like clean the house. And I really remember liking Van Halen a lot, and like Kiss and like Aerosmith. And like, I think he just would play a lot of like these older records. And, I think it was just the guitar that drew me. I just really remember that early stage in my life just being drawn to that.
Arena rock.
Yeah, arena rock.
I know. Absolutely. It well. I'm 13 years old in 1970, so the first gig me and D. Boone saw was T-Rex. Okay, so
that's amazing.
Yeah, everybody says that. But it really did happen. In this pad you grew up, what town was it? Because you're in Portland now, right?
Yeah. I grew up in upstate New York, in like central New York, a little bit south of Syracuse.
Ah, you know, there's a lot of music people. Well, more about Hudson Valley, but upstate there, you'd be surprised. I've been talking to a lot of people. Anyway, in the pad that you grew up, was there musical instruments?
Not really. No, my parents didn't really play any musical instruments, so we didn't really have them like floating around or anything.
They were more listeners.
Yeah.
Okay. So what about at school? Were you in the choir, the marching band, or shit like that?
In fourth grade, I started playing clarinet, and I remember doing that for a few years, and I really didn't like it because I wasn't very good at it. And then I think in like seventh grade, I started playing guitar.
Okay.
And that really.
Yeah. How did that happen?
Kind of opened up everything.
How did that happen? I want to know what was the moment that made you switch from the licorice stick to the sixth string.
I think it was just, I think that those early influence of like that kind of like arena rock and roll, just like the idea of being able to play songs and make songs, appealed to me. And I think that as a young person too, I just thought it would be like a much cooler thing to do. And, you know, I probably could get like a girlfriend and like it would be cool to rock out and stuff. And all these like young ideas, I think that like it was just drew me to it. And I remember just, you know, I got my dad had borrowed a guitar from his friend so I could like, you know, experiment with it and try it out. And it was just like this little acoustic guitar, but I remember just learning all the chords and locking myself in my room and learning so many songs. And that's how it started.
So yeah. Self-taught, you didn't have a guitar teacher.
No, I eventually got like a guitar teacher, and I had a few lessons, but it really didn't stick, and I just kind of, I'm predominantly self-taught for sure.
Autodidact.
Yeah.
I think that's the fancy word. Okay, can I ask you, what was the first record you bought with your own money?
I think the first record I bought with my own money, I was really into The Wallflowers, and I remember buying the one headlight, and I think that and like Green Day's Dookie, I think those are two that I early on remember buying.
And Wallflower, that's Bobby Dylan's son?
Yeah, Jacob Dylan, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, and then the first gig you went and saw, Randall.
Who did I see? Oh, I think I went with my friends. My friend's mom took us to see Our Lady Peace, in Syracuse somewhere. But
I remember those cats. Yeah.
They're like Canadian.
Right.
Yeah,
absolute. But you were in upstate New York. You ain't far away.
Exactly. So I remember just being like, Our Lady Peace was a cool band, and I liked them. So, but that fact that was one of the first ones. Yeah.
So now, you moved on from the acoustic to an electric guitar, right?
Yep. Pretty quickly.
And you got an amp, and what did? Now I'm not saying after school like graduate, but after school in the afternoon, did you get into the garage band, basement band, bedroom band kind of trip?
Yeah, totally. My I grew up in a very small town in a little bit south of Syracuse, and I really remember like getting an electric guitar and just wanting to form a band, and so I got my friends to form this like cover band with me, and we would just, you know, learn and play a lot of our favorite songs. And my friend's dad at the time also had a cover band, and I think this is what, like, part of our influence too. But they had like a barn, and they had like a little stage and a PA system where they practiced. So they were able to, like, you know, give us that space to go and play and practice. And it was really like a monumental thing to have like a venue/practice space available to us.
And these were grown men, and they're sharing it with the kids.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's,
and that was
very
a huge
to them. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a huge thing to be able to, like, you know, you learn at a young age of, like, you know, the how the PA and the mixer works, and, like, you know, running the snake, like, across the room and stuff. And, like, remember just, like, really being fascinated by all of it, and then just being just really into the idea, like, we had such access to space, you know?
Now, I want to use a little information I know about you now, but was there a parallel universe with tape recorders?
Yeah, I think that, like, I mean, for me, I mean, I wasn't, you know, my earliest experiences were with tapes, I think, were much like everyone else, of just, you know, I had a tape recorder, and I remember making a lot of mixtapes and recording off the radio, and I remember, you know, I had this, I still have it floating around somewhere, like, a couple mixtapes that I made off of, like, K-Rock, and, like, had a bunch of Smashing Pumpkins songs and stuff, and just recording stuff off the radio was a big thing. And then, you know, I moved on to CDs and everything, and burning CDs and making my own mix CDs from there. But those were some of the first experiences I had of just, like, having a boombox.
It's other people's music, but then you start using it as a fucking instrument itself.
Yeah, that, I mean, that happened later for sure, but it was, like, an early...
Okay, let's stay in these early days. Did that barn band ever do any gigs?
Oh, yeah, we played a lot of gigs, yeah.
Okay, did you guys have a name?
What's that?
Did you have a name?
We had a couple. I mean, over the years, I think, like, from 8th grade to 12th grade, you know, I was in various bands. Like, I was in a few versions of, like, you know, cover bands. That was, like, I think our very first band was called Yellow 5, and we were named ourselves after some active ingredient in Mountain Dew, and we thought
we were
sure,
it's a color, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's like that turned into like a different kind of cover band, and then at one point it turned into a ska band, then I was like in a side project band that, you know, like I was like trying to be like a real like kind of like pop punk emo band and stuff. I went through a lot of different phases, but
you keep saying cover band, so you weren't writing your own material yet.
Well, in the pop punk emo band, I was trying to write my own stuff, and I think a lot of my friends were trying to do a lot of covers and stuff, or just play other people's music. But I had
believe me, that's the way me and D Boone, and no one we knew in the whole 70s wrote their own songs in Pedro. Okay, everybody, the best dude was the dude who could play Black Dog the best. We didn't about music as a means of expression, you know. It was more like building models.
Absolutely. And I think I was writing songs by myself, but, like, you know, trying to bring it to a band and stuff, and trying to write that for more people, you know, is something I wanted to do. And, you know, I eventually started doing more in later bands, but early on it was just like learning a lot of other people's songs, and I think that was there was a lot of value in that too of like
learning
song structures, learning chord progressions,
some wood
learning how some songs are made.
You're talking about the barn, some woodshed, right? Good prac.
Exactly.
And so, that's a trip that you were in the emo power pop. I mean, because I'm going to play Whirl, and that is far from, like, emo power pop.
Yeah.
That's the way life is, you know? It trips out like that.
Well, and it's funny, too. Like, Whirl, like, I brought back an acoustic guitar of, like, you know, like, I normally don't play acoustic guitar in Amulets and stuff, but I wanted to, you know, like, bring it back in a way that, like, you know, I was, like, I still like playing acoustic guitar, but it just doesn't feel like it has a place anymore. But, you know, I, like, tried to carve out a place, and, like, yeah, it's different, a lot different of a song, but that was kind of the fun of it.
You know, but it's okay. To me, music's music, and it's all vocabulary.
Absolutely, yeah.
Let's listen.
Bailey, don't die on me, please.
No. Promise.
Like, you're a whore.
I'll do function. Oh, okay. FMP.
FMP? I don't
have it should be on the right side of your
keyboard. Pog sensor. Thank you.
Oh, but that's enough, though.
That's pretty fucking pog. How you liking, level 100? And we got some inside info that, you don't want to proceed yet.
That makes sense, though.
It worked. Wait, why is it?
올라올 때를 대비해서.
details.
It really did. I don't even
want prettier coffee. Oh my god.
Soon.
I'm craving fucking chicken.
Soon.
Okay. So stripping, you good? Did you get
my hoe? Especially, yeah, I don't think you're that just the snowy tundra and snowy tiger. That's where we're in now, yeah? Snowy tundra.
Important, Bailey.
Damn it.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's just
toxic.
She just assumes the worst of me. Okay. No food in the world.
Yeah, we're,
Okay.
No, wait. I asked her for bone meal and stood next to her. And
this is cool, man.
Disabled rain particles. It still looks good even if you disable the
not
ring.
Like, no, okay, alright.
It could have been so much better if she was there.
How could I have guys.
Not yet, actually.
I mean, I meant if you offered.
Not yet, I prefer to stay on.
It's really hot if you need it.
Wait, was that his rifle?
Never know. Warning. I might die.
No,
I'm gonna die. I'm gonna die. Goodbye.
If I stay on this, I mean.
License, I'm starting.
Other
Look
out.
For
in other news, I have
4
iron
now.
Very
cool.
Please.
I don't get free handouts, but I just got a.
I don't have any.
I just inform us if
oh,
you
no.
find.
Of the window.
I thought you were just going to do a sample of it and like that's
man,
it.
I'd be really
like
pissed
everywhere
if
else.
Warp minor 1 somehow ended up in my possession.
How do I use it? Do I have to stand there with energy or something?
Shop, buddy.
I also got quite a lot of gravel, so in case you decide to forget gravel
again. I mean,
that's
something I would personally like, but I also don't want...
I hear him. Where are you, little fucker?
Oh.
Gather around.
Oh, what type of skin is that?
Alright.
Fog.
Alright.
Chris, thank you so much, bro.
This is the weak village. This is what we call a pathetic village.
Oh, I think to make camps.
You set your entire base on fire by accident.
I mean, but I kind of want to kill the ender dragon.
I found this
it's good to know that I can set my entire place on
fire. Sitting on the ground?
Right, that's kind of nuts.
The jump thing. Where are you?
Oh, no.
How the frick is it still right?
Pretty conscious.
Ah!
You little slut.
That's hideous.
Wait, do I have to ride the horse?
Is
that the man?
2048 in our game.
There it is.
Nice.
Quietly. I mean, actually, you're all...
Patient, how are you?
Even more like brotherhead of these dogs.
I tame the horse.
You can go to another world?
And you're going up against me in the
what is happening with this?
You just lost 40, you know what I mean? So for me,
I have no
idea
what I'm doing.
Sorry.
Not like anyone here is kind, but be kind.
I blame you.
Where did you get the chicken from?
I threw one egg and I
can see the surface. Give me up.
Oh, Reese, you have my ability.
Okay. 2, 3, 5 waves.
Give it back.
That's about one bird.
Stay down there. I'll throw it at you.
What are you? Definitely need to throw it at you.
Yeah, you guys gotta start checking for
no!
Are you playing music for the NPCs?
A T1 down.
Identity theft is 6 months
by Hansen Murders. I heard that. It that's from cool. outside.
You put like a.
Alright, this is getting weird. I'm
fire,
yeah,
though,
like, yeah.
Build my campfire. I don't like dirt. Dirt looks ugly.
But,
I need
yeah,
to see that, Reese. That sounds hilarious.
Scale. Hey, that's a great question.
I thought you were like all-knowing or something.
No, nothing.
We do still have.
Wait,
who's
paraning 거예요?
Oh!
Yeah. This bug report,
can it be
please, and let me know where you would like to. It's right over there.
you piece of shit.
I'm sorry, Aerith. I want to learn by not, like, just...
Yeah, I doubt that.
You feel so hot. Ha!
Wholeheartedly doubt that.
You got bones.
This whole climbing thing.
I thought it was a secret. Where's that situation?
Oh, no. Well, this is good. This is good.
Man, it sucks. Options.
You can just give me mine.
I'm good on the gravel department, thank you.
And then I turn rain and snow off.
They call him Sam Neo. It was just something they called him, I don't know why. He even called himself Sam Neo. That's how he signed his checks. I know. I checked. Well, you know, one day Sam Neon was walking down the street. Walking against the traffic. He was hit by a car. He was killed instantly.
Campaign competition seems so strange. Confession. But what the hell was your parents teaching? You let these bogus entertainers sleep with you. And I know it's bad to dwell on the past, but to me it's a bug, not a feature. Yeah, you know me, I was a different kind of creature. The one to put back the pieces. Even when the baby went up in smoke, yeah, we hope we can make it past. Stop the clock right now, make it last. Because if this is the past, I don't move so fast. I don't move so fast. And the future has a way of becoming the past. And I don't want it to move so fast. I don't want it to move so fast. And if you can't love me like you did before, kicking in that bedroom door, I don't wanna know you. Yeah, I don't wanna know. I don't wanna know.
Why for Pedro show. Started that chunk of music off of Amulets doing Whirl. And the acoustic guitar makes its reappearance for many moons. Network Glass from Baltimore out of that with 5.52. Wharton's Expanding Jazz Dance, Wharton Tears. A fun city, a great studio we had in Manhattan. I got to record with Bob Quine, Steve Shelley, Lee Rinaldo. Abstract. Bombus Brendan after that with Sam Neon. Something brand new from here, East L.A., a new band called Hot Dog Stand, Touch Me When I Pee, Where I Pee. You know, I was raised in Navy housing, and it's hard for me to deal with that. When sort of like the P word, you know, that some people use for this show, but just that word P, man. When I grew up in Navy housing, if a male used that word... You'd get a bald spot slapped upside your head. I mean, piss is okay, but that pee, I mean, girl said that shit. But, you know, that's all these weird ways to be masculine. That's fucked up. Are You a Cop? They got a brand new album, and here's Eyes Lash Out. Then Bob Buckle Jr. out of Iowa, Dubuque, I think. Bleach Bones in the Valley. From Sam Locke Ward in Iowa City. Big release tomorrow, May Day. I'll tell you about it tomorrow. Quarantina Part 11, Yeshua from Joe Cardamone, part of his Quarantina series. And finally, Amulets with Tears in the Fabric. Or no, Tears. Ah, see how English is, people? That could be Tears.
Right, that was on purpose, too. I wanted it to be either.
I know what you're talking about, Randall. When I wrote History Lesson Part 2, when I said we were fucking corn dogs, yes, it can be the adjective, but it can also be the verb.
Yep.
Okay, continue with your story. So you're in upstate New York doing power pop, starting to write your own tunes. How do you get to Portland? How do you get to Amulet World? There must have been a whole bunch of stuff in between.
Oh, yeah, tons of stuff in between. So from Syracuse, went to school out in Buffalo, and I was doing, studying, like, University of Buffalo.
Oh, okay, because there's two colleges, and Minutemen got to play Buff State once.
Yeah, but, I mean, Buff State's great. I went to a bunch of shows at Buff State. I went to the University of Buffalo studying filmmaking, actually, and I was really into making videos at the time, too, and... I kind of like took a turn where I started getting into more experimental video and like doing some more artsy, weird videos. And so I think from there I started to experiment. I think that's where I learned, about circuit bending, and I started experimenting more with tapes. And I remember buying, a lot of like thrifted toys and tape players and stuff and just kind of like playing with them. And, that's where I really kind of like got a lot weirder, I think, and like took what I knew about music and tried to apply it to certain videos I was making and making soundtracks for that and stuff.
That's why your stuff has a cinematic quality to it.
Yeah, I think that was a big push in that. And I think that at that time, too, in college, I was getting into a lot more metal and post rock and different bands and more instrumental music in general. And I think, from there, I was living in Buffalo for a little bit, and then I was in different bands too at the time. And one was a post rock band, and we did a lot of, instrumental songs and stuff. And I really started to, explore that more and explore more sound effects and pedals and other gear. And, from there, I moved to Austin, and I was living in Austin for about 5 or 6 years, and I was trying to find people to play with in Austin, and it was really hard. I felt like, I don't know, like, it was just very saturated with a lot of musicians, and, like, I couldn't quite find where I stood in it. So I ended up making Amulets as a side project. Even though I didn't really have another project, it was just a project that I was just recording by myself with. And I started to play live, and I remember taking a turn where I couldn't play live the way I wanted to. And I ended up pivoting the whole project into being something very different, where I started to experiment with tapes and tape loops And I was very inspired by this video on YouTube that I watched from Alessandro Cortini of Nine Inch Nails. And he was using a four-track as an instrument and kind of like playing the faders with these different chord progressions. And I just like became obsessed with that idea and took that and ran. And just kind of experimented from there and introduced guitars and looping with that and just kind of made my own band out of it.
And it was important to call it, give it its own name instead of using your, you know, the name you're born with.
Yeah. For me, like, I've always felt more comfortable with band names than, I don't think I've ever used my name. I always felt like it, you know, it never resonated with me for, or like it felt like too, like, singer-songwriter or something to be like, you know, just my name.
James Taylor.
Yeah, James Taylor, sure, that's a great example.
People like to Fire and Rain and all that. And
yeah.
He liked Jim Croce, too. There was something, I think it was the guitar playing, and he kind of liked that finger picking and stuff. But,
yeah.
So, an ambulance gig, was it a lot of equipment?
No, actually,
Was it that suitcase that I seen on the YouTube video?
Yes, okay. Yes. I was very into the idea of modular synths, too, at the time. And I couldn't afford many, but I loved the concept of the suitcase idea where they kind of, like, opened up their little modular synth case and it was all, you know, patched and ready to go. I took that idea.
Jim O'Rourke had one where the lid was actually the keyboard.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I mean, if they had keyboards, Alan Ravenstein had one. It was just knobs in patch.
Yeah.
There was no keyboard. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's
kind of like or EML or some shit like that.
Yeah, that's the idea that I was just like was trying to go for, and I was figuring out how I could do that with my four track setup and my tape loops and all the gear. So I just kind of like it became a project to meticulously plan out how everything could fit in a suitcase, and from there. The shows were really pretty minimal because I could just bring my suitcase.
Yeah, yeah.
I could bring my guitar and my pedal board, and then that was it. And I could play a whole show.
Tell me about the first one, the first Amulet gig.
Well, I mean, the first Amulet gig was different. It was because I was trying to do like a darker electronic, like witch house genre kind of thing.
Witch house, and, I've never heard of that one.
Yeah, and like there was a lot of backing tracks because I didn't know what I was doing and I was just playing a couple parts, and so it looked a lot different. It still had like a little tabletop setup with a bunch of gear, but I felt like I wasn't really playing that much and relying on a lot of assistance from the backing track. And so when I pivoted, I wanted to make sure that I could create most of these sounds live and do a lot of looping and build a lot more and feel more active in what I was doing. And so the first show, I mean, I think it was probably pretty boring to watch me, like, you know, press a few buttons and just kind of, like, dance around.
You mean like that? What's the classic stereotype? The crap top and the dude hits the space bar.
Yeah, I kind of felt like that. I kind of felt like I was like, you know, a worse DJ. And like,
so you didn't have the guitar around your neck and shit.
No, like. I didn't have the guitar. And I think that was an important part too that I realized as I was playing this music and playing live, like I didn't have the satisfaction that I did in all the previous bands I had played, and I think that was because I wasn't playing guitar, because I was missing something that I knew how to do. Yeah. All this stuff was very new to me.
Sure.
And didn't provide a lot of confidence. But once I started changing the way I approached Amulets, and when I was doing the tape looping stuff, I was just trying to think about how I could incorporate guitar, because if I were to play this live again, I would want to play with a guitar because I would know that's always something I could fall back on. That's something I could at least, you know, if everything else fails, like, at least I could play guitar and, like, you know, fudge my way through the rest of the set or something, you know? And it was kind of like, that's provided me some kind of comfort and knowing that, like, that's something I know how to play. Everything else is new to me, But guitar, I know.
Yeah, but it sounds really practical, you know, even not so theoretical. It's a mixture of, you know, being real about reality.
Yeah, but absolutely.
We're at the end of the first hour, April 30, 2021, Dish Watt Pedo Show, special guest, Randall Taylor. Hold tight for hour two. April 30, 2021, it's the second hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
Perfect.
Damn, I'm good. Watt for Pedro show. Started the second hour off with Amulets doing Bloomin' and Ben Salter out of Tasmania with Isolationism. Justice Yeldon, his brother Lucas in Sydney. Dinosaur and Duck, Botanist. I think that's a label, mate, of yours. Lycandian Argentium. Yeah, with the electric zither, right, and shit. It's great. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's Roberto backwards. Ultra Bar. Or something. But he's great. He was on the show a couple months ago, and really inspiring cat. Chichi Libre. After that, that's Jason from Caesar's Palace and... what's his other pants? Yeah, Pants Exploder. That's a great band name. Mi Plato de Barro. Barro. You gotta roll that what? Amulets, finally. The new normal. Okay, so, second gig's much different than the first gig. But probably it was an evolution, right?
Yeah, yeah, it definitely was an evolution. It definitely took me a few gigs to realize that I didn't like what I was doing. But then, yeah, it was definitely, it's been a constant evolution for sure.
Okay, and how long you stay in Austin?
So I was there about 5 or 6 years, and then, you know, I started Amulets there, and I was kind of playing a few shows there, but it was really, it was kind of hit or miss, too. Like, as even when I got the kind of Amulets formula that I liked down of, like, the suitcase and the guitar and everything, it still was kind of hard to find shows and, like, be paired with the right acts and everything. I think it was just, like, a lack of knowing many people there. And so eventually I moved to Portland, and then so I've been here the last almost 4 years. And since once I moved to Portland, you know, I think I had built, you know, a small fan base. You know, I had done a lot of touring out of Austin and gone all over. And so when I came to Portland, you know, some people like actually knew who I was, which was great. And it was a lot easier to make new make new friends and get new shows and a lot of other stuff. So it kind of felt like a really good move for me.
Now, Amulets touring don't require a van.
No, I do it all out of my Honda Fit.
Yeah, that's bitching. Spotsy did that, you know. Maybe one day with bass, you know, these Class D amps and these little speakers.
Yeah.
Speakers. Because that's the way, I mean... Especially when you're an older punk rocker.
I really don't need that much space, and the only thing I bring along really is my friend Dan, who helps me drive and
helps
shows, and like he's a great guy, and he's actually on the new record, and he's reading the poem at the end of Whirl.
So he's the man behind the man. All right.
Yeah, he's the screaming voice, and I loved. You know, it was such a beautiful thing that he sent over because I really wanted him to be on the record and, like, contribute. And like, he sent that over, and I just wrote the music around it. And I'm like, this song is very different than other songs I've written. But, you know, it just felt right to include it, especially at the end.
Yeah. I want to play Heaviest Weight. And people, maybe it's another pun.
Yes.
Okay.
It is.
You're good at that, Ram.
Can you turn me up in the headphones, please?
From Pete Rochelle, Chunk of Music started off with Amulets doing Heaviest Weight. And that's AIT spell, people. We're in homonym world again, pun rock. Tommy Dial after that from Alaska. And here, I'm going to destroy another language. This is the Gaelic one. So I'm so sorry. Sean Baalek Salah. And then John Wayne, and there's no H in that John, people. Texas Polka. It's not the movie guy you think. A Glimpse Trio, Few and Far, Waku Waku Kingdom, Brother Sugar out of Berlin, Pure Love, and finally, Empty Tribute, Amulets. So, Randall, you mentioned something last time we spoke, something about composition, and it makes me, I've always wondered this about Amulets, composition, improvisation. Well, what part is what? How much is so much?
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's a little bit of both, for sure. I feel like it's kind of been shifting, too, over the years. Like, when I first started recording, I was really into the idea of trying to improvise most of it. And so I would kind of set up the tape loops with the pre-recorded parts, but then I would kind of compile it all together in a live way. And so I remember a lot of my early albums, I just kind of hit record on the computer and I just played. And so it was a combination of tapes and the guitars and everything looping. And I would kind of just, I would get done and it would be an 8-minute song and I would go to bed and I would kind of listen to it the next day. I'm like, yeah, that sounds great. And it was very much a reaction to what I had previously done, which is just sit in the computer and kind of endlessly tweak things and have so much going on where I'd never felt like I finished a song. So it was a very much a purposeful thing to try to just get songs done and try to put something out there. And so for the first few years, I was doing that probably at a very rapid pace where I was just like recording and releasing and recording and releasing. And so from there, I think it stopped being, especially the last few albums, I've taken a lot more time and been more intentional with composing like in the computer, and I'm still like doing multi-tracking, but not like a ton, and try not to go crazy with it. But you know, it's still like composed, and then there's parts that are improvised that I record over that, and especially in the live show, it's like half and half, where half is like loosely composed, and then the other half is kind of like, I'm going to just kind of play a part here and fill this in. And so each time I play, it's a little different.
So like your pre-recorded is like kind of a spine or skeleton that you're hanging.
Yeah, it's like a kind of a skeleton, yeah. Because all the tape loops have, you know, so many parts recorded to them. But the way I combine them and everything, it becomes, yeah, a little bit different each time.
Now, do you make a distinction between tape loops and these fucking digital pedals?
I mean, yes. I think that there's, for me, there is a distinct sonic difference that, like, I you know, but I also use both. I feel like there is a very much a world where I'm creating the analog, you know, tapes and tape loops are going into digital devices and, like, coming out and it's a wild mixture of a lot of different sounds and textures.
So you're no purist. At the end of the day, it's what comes out of the fucking speakers, right?
No, I'm way more about feel and texture and character and like what it evokes than it is what the tool is. And honestly, there's so much that I try to look at a lot of things. It's like, what can I do with this, or like, what can I make out of it, and try to be way more resourceful about my approach to certain things. And, you know, that's part of why I like thrifting and like finding different tape players and different weird noisemakers and stuff. I just think that there's a lot of potential in a lot of these things, and especially combined with more sophisticated digital pedals or something that make wilder sounds, like the combo can be really interesting. And I spent a lot of years kind of exploring those different sounds.
Hybrid,
for sure.
Yeah, can I ask you an analog device question?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Have you ever tried bass?
Have I ever tried bass? Like playing bass guitar?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a bass.
Oh, I didn't. Well, you know, I'm working on the mind reading, but you're going to have to use words until I get better at that. Because I'm a little prejudiced with the area. So I was curious, does it go into ambulance stuff?
Yeah, I mean, the bass, I record some bass stuff, but a lot of the bass that I use is, like, fake bass. Because in the live setting, I found that, like, you know, between the tape loops and the guitar, you know, you're hitting a lot of mid and high range stuff, but the lower end can get lost.
Yeah.
Or just isn't there. So, I mean, in an effort to keep being a one-man band, on my pedal board, I have a pitchfork pedal that does a nice job of tracking and doing an octave down.
Yeah.
And so I'll kind of put that on and do some big distorted bass stuff that really, it was just really fun, and it really opens up the songs and makes things a lot bigger.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, April 30, 2021, edition Watt Peter Show, special guest Randall Taylor. Hold tough, hour three! April 30, 2021, it's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro Show. What for Pivo show. Started the third hour off with Amulets doing Collapse in Memory. Then somebody called Heimbach. Out of Darker Days. And the Amulets live. I found some live Amulets. And this is how I kind of stumbled onto Heimbach. I was on the YouTube.com thing, searching around. This was Ambient Walkman Symphony. Great fucking piece. And,
no, thank you.
But also, I got turned onto this doc. It's called Tape Wizards. And,
yeah.
And this what you tell me about this.
So last fall, well, I guess not even last fall, whatever, a couple years ago, a student reached out to me and he was like, I'm a student at Notre Dame and I got this grant to film this, and make a mini doc. And I want to come out to Portland and follow you around for a few days and make a short film about you for this project. And I said, okay, that sounds weird that you want to follow me around, but I could be the subject of your doc for sure. And so it was really awesome. Like he did a great job. And I just kind of shared my life with him of like what I do kind of on a day to day basis, how I make my sounds, you know, kind of just shared, my studio with him, and I kind of timed it out too. I told him that I was releasing a new album, and it was, you know, I was having a album release show with it, and that he should come around that time so he could kind of get the build up to that, and then film the show, and you know, do all of that. So, but he, you know, he made it. He did a really great job. He sent it to a few festivals. I think he got recognized at a few of them, maybe won some awards, I'm not entirely sure, but then he gave me a copy and he just told me to put it online if I wanted to, and from there it's just kind of like blown up a little bit, and a lot of people have watched it, and it's been really interesting to see people's reactions to it, and I think it's important too, because I think that, you know, not only did I share my life and workspace with everyone, but I shared my face, which is, I think, you know, especially on YouTube and Instagram and stuff, like, I'm not talking or showing my face a lot. It's just, you know, tapes in my hands and stuff. And so I think for people to see me and see me in my element, I think it was really nice. You know, it was a nice way to introduce the man behind all of this, I guess.
Right. And look, this idea of community, because like, right, the one man band. But you're a guy, you know there's other, there was probably guys working with tapes before you.
Absolutely, and totally.
Like I mentioned this cat, Heimbach, right?
Yeah.
So how important is that? I mean, you're inspired, but in another way, you might be inspiring them also.
Totally. Well, I think, I mean, I'm friends with Heimbach, and he and I have, you know, kind of gone back and forth and worked on a few things and stuff, and over the years, like, I think we came up in the same way, and, like, we've kind of gone in different paths, but, you know, I think that we've used tapes and different experiences with analog mediums and stuff over the years to, I think, to build an audience and to build a following and to and all of this stuff, but I think it's really important. I think that we both recognize that there are definitely people, you know, before us and after us, who are going to be using tapes, and we're just another part of that history. And you know, I always say that I never claim to have made the tape loop at all. Like, I'm just another person using it as a tool, and that that it is part of a richer history. And I'm so awesomely proud to be doing the work I'm doing it and to help inspire others too. It wasn't, you know, my intention to go out and inspire other people, but the fact that my work can do that and to reach other people and, give them inspiration to try their own, experiments and stuff. It makes me so, so happy.
Yeah. It's fucking happening. And you're aware of Delia Derbyshire, right? That she performed the first Doctor Who theme, and that was all tape. That was no synthesizer. All
that
tape.
That was all tape. Really.
Now it's way before cassettes, of course. They're running around door handles and like chairs and shit. Here, yeah. I want to play a collab you did with Midwave.
ネズミの嫁入り。昔々ある家のお蔵の中に、お米を持って、麦を持って、泡を持って、豆を持って、大層豊かに暮らしているお金持ちのネズミが住んでおりました。子供がないので神様にお願いしますと、やっと女の子が生まれました。その子はずんずん大きくなって、輝くほど美しくなって、それはネズミのお国で誰一人比べるもののない日本一いい娘になりました。こうなると、もうネズミの仲間には見渡したところ、とても娘のお婿さんにするようなものはありませんでした。ネズミのお父さんとお母さんは、うちの娘は日本一の娘なのだから、何でも日本一のお婿さんをもらわなければならない、と言いました。そこで、この世の中で誰が一番偉いかというと、それは高い高い空の上から世界中を明るく照らしておいでになるお日様の他にはありませんでした。そこでお父さんはお母さんと娘を連れて天へ登っていきました。そしてお日様に、お日様、お日様、あなたは世の中で一番偉いお方です。どうぞ私の娘をお嫁にもらってくださいまし、と言って、丁寧にお辞儀をしました。すると、お日様はニコニコなさりながら、それはありがたいが、世の中には私よりもっと偉いものがあるよ、とおっしゃいました。お父さんはびっくりしました。まあ、あなたより偉い方があるのですか。それはどなたでございますか。それは雲さ。私がいくら空でカンカンてって言おうと思っても、雲が出てくるともうダメになるのだからね。なるほど。お父さんはそこで、今度は雲のところへ出かけました。雲さん、雲さん、あなたは世の中で一番偉いお方です。どうぞ私の娘をお嫁にもらってくださいまし。それはありがたいが、世の中には私よりもっと偉いものがあるよ。お父さんはびっくりしました。まあ、あなたよりも偉い方があるのですか。それはどなたでございますか。それは風さ。風に吹き飛ばされては私もかなわないよ。なるほど。お父さんはそこで今度は風のところへ出かけて行きました。風さん、風さん。あなたは世の中で一番偉いお方です。どうぞ私の娘をお嫁にもらってくださいまし。それはありがたいが、世の中には私よりもっと偉いものがあるよ。お父さんはびっくりしました。まあ、あなたよりも偉い方があるのですか。それはどなたでございますか。それは壁さ。壁ばかりは私の力でもとても吹き飛ばすことはできないからね。なるほど。お父さんはそこでまたのこのこ壁のところへ出かけていきました。壁さん、壁さん、あなたは世の中で一番偉いお方です。どうぞうちの娘をお嫁にもらってくださいまし。それはありがたいが、世の中には私よりもっと偉いものがあるよ。お父さんはびっくりしました。 まあ、あなたよりも偉い方があるのですか。それはどなたでございますか。それは誰でもない、そういうネズミさんさ。私がいくら真っ四角な顔をして、固くなって、頑張っていても、ネズミさんは平気で私の体を食い破って、穴を開けて通り抜けていくじゃないか。だから私はどうしてもネズミさんにはかなわないよ。なるほど。とネズミのお父さんは、今度こそ本当に真から感心したように、ポンと手を打って、これは今まで気がつかなかった。じゃあ私どもが世の中で一番偉いのですね。ありがたい、ありがたい、とニコニコしながら威張って帰っていきました。そして帰ると早速、お隣の中助ネズミを娘のお婿さんにしました。若いお婿さんとお嫁さんは仲良く暮らして、お父さんとお母さんを大事にしました。そしてたくさん子供を産んで、オクラのネズミの一家はますます栄えました。
Watt from Pedro Show. Started off that last chunk of music for this edition. Midwife and Amulets in a collab doing Heaven. And then the Mouse Brides from Fuson. Finally, Amulets, Severed Seas. Now, that ain't on the new record, people. That's from older. But very good. And tell me about this collab you did with Midwife.
Midwife... We first met at a, we both were playing this festival in, Columbia, Missouri. Yeah. And that's where we met. And I've been a big fan of Midwife, and it was really cool to meet her. And, we just became friends, after that. And, you know, definitely talked about, doing a collab at some point. And actually, that's where I first learned that she was going to release her first album on Flenser, and I was very excited for her, and I was jealous at the same time. I was like, oh, I want to be on Flenser, too, and it's really funny that,
that's how that happened. I mean, Fred...
Well, I mean, it kind of started with that conversation and a few others. I think I knew a few other people that were also on Flenser, so it kind of just became this thing where I started having more conversations with them, and... could point to like all the people that I knew on Flenser and stuff.
There's a lot of good music coming out of there, man.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's really awesome to be part of that, for sure.
It makes me feel like, you know, the old days with the Hooskers and the Black Flag and the Minutemen and Meat Puppets. And there's something about being, you know, where you're not copying each other, but like you're all on the same boat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an interesting place to be, for sure. Like, it's so awesome that no one's like quite the same, but there's a thread between everyone that's like really interesting.
Yeah, absolute. So I like what they're doing there, and I think what you dudes or musicians mm-hmm. this collab was happening. Who went first?
Midwife went first and recorded that song and had sent it to me and asked me to like kind of lay down some guitar or whatever I wanted over it. And so I ended up doing a lot of like guitar work on it. And I kind of made this like swelling soundscape in the back. And so that's kind of included throughout the whole song. And there's some parts that get a little distorted and stuff. But yeah, I kind of just contributed toward that. And then she sent me back the mixed final product, and it just worked and was amazing.
Yeah. Now, is that a newer thing for you, because you say you're mainly a man alone guy, but so dealing with somebody else's music, it's kind of another way to do music, right?
Absolutely. I think that, like, I think for Amulets as a one-man band is definitely that's the way it's been, but I've been through this, I've been getting more opportunities to collab with people and to get, like, I get hired for commissioned work and remixes and stuff, and so to use my talents and my gear and the my approach and everything and to add to other people's music has been has become a job for me, and it's been really amazing to be able to say that.
Wow, bitchin'. And where can people find you on the internet?
Everywhere now. I'm on Instagram, YouTube, Bandcamp.
I'm asking you do you have your own website?
Oh yeah, it's amuletsmusic.com.
Okay, so AMULETSMUSIC.com, people. Check it out. Yes. It's a great site. I've been there. I made it sound like I didn't know, but I did. I went and checked it out. What's your next plan? Because this record just came out. Of course, you can't tour yet, but are you working on new material?
Yeah, I'm actually, I have this artist residency next week, and I'm going out to this place on the Washington coast called Sou'wester. And I'm staying there for a week, and I'm going to start working on some new music. And so I think it feels like a good time to, you know, start working on a new record. And I got some new ideas, and excited to see what happens.
And what do? You bring the suitcase up there?
Yeah, I bring the suitcase, bring the pedal board, bring a lot of different recording gear. You know, it's kind of like limitations, too. Like, I don't want to bring too much stuff, try to figure out what I can do with certain things. And but yeah, you know, I think that it's going to be an inspiring place to be, and I think that I'm excited to see what comes out.
And when you record, mm-hmm. is it in a pewter?
Yes, it's
you use it like a tape machine, like I do, right?
Yeah, I mean, I have headphones where I've definitely recorded on a 4-track directly to it and then bounce it into the computer. But lately it's just been kind of like taking all of the sounds and making them outside the computer and then just bringing them in to record.
Right, right. That makes good sense. It's been a big, big honor to have you on the show. Thanks so much, Randall. When you get this fucking Washington State music recorded, will you come back on the show and we can play it and talk about it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it'll be a little bit, but I can definitely come back and talk about it. I'd love to share it with you.
Okay, like Orson Welles said, we will sell no wine before it's time. Thanks so much, truly.
Yeah,
keep on, brother. It's been April 30, 2021, and this is what Pedo Show. Keep your powder dry.